This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Ethical dilemmas have concerned football coach John Shoup for much of his career. He was a coach at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and he criticized the university's treatment of college athletes embroiled in the 2010 NCAA investigation. Later in his career, he was fired from his job at Purdue University after openly advocating for players' rights and calling attention to racism in college sports. John's wife, Marsha Mount Shoup, was by his side through all of it, and she is uniquely equipped to be there. Marsha's an athlete herself, also a theologian with a degree in ethics. She's the author of two books, including Touchdowns for Jesus and Other Signs of the Apocalypse. John now teaches and coaches at A.C. Reynolds High School here in Asheville. Marsha is the pastor of Asheville's Grace Covenant Presbyterian Church, and they are collaborating with Blue Ridge Public Radio on a podcast entitled Going Deep, Sports in the 21st Century. And they join us now. John and Marsha, welcome to State of Things. Good to have you here. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure, John. Let's sports in the 21st century. Do you think sports has changed much over recent days?
Well, I think sports is always changing, for sure. And just since we've been in the sports world, it's changed immensely from when I started coaching to now in so many ways. And I think that's a lot of what our conversations are about on our podcast.
How have things changed?
Well, for example, I think nowadays every coach and every player is more of an independent contractor, whereas back when I fell in love with the game of football, if you won ugly, that was okay. No matter how you won, winning was winning, and I think that strategy trumps statistics. Today, I think statistics, individual statistics, offensive and defensive statistics, kind of trump strategy, and really the game of football is the only sport in the world where the same people don't play offense as plays defense. Mm. And it's kind of that coupled with fantasy football, where players are more independent contractors than they are team-oriented, has really, I think, complicated issues, not just for coaches, but for players as well sometimes.
Well, that's the business of sports and the X's and O's. Marsha, what about the ethics? Have those questions changed much? Are we just asking ourselves questions we never bothered to ask before? What do you think is happening?
Well, I think there are several things that are happening. One is we're just in a particular cultural moment in which we're hearing some different voices of impacted people. And I think social media has helped with that, the internet. When John first went into coaching, the internet didn't really exist. And we saw how that has changed the game. In some ways, it's made it more of something everybody can participate in. And in other ways, it has really commercialized it even more and therefore commodified the bodies that are involved in it even more. So I think there's a kind of amplification of issues that have always been there. We're just able to really have a conversation in a different way now as a society.
And John, especially in collegiate sports, you say that plays out this commodification in the way we treat students. That was certainly writ large in the UNC Chapel Hill scandal, the sports scandal. And you were there for part of that, and you were critical of the university.
Oh, yeah, I was there for the bulk of it. And many of the young men that were suspended by the university, some of whom were banned for life by the university, were men that I had feelings and Marsha had feelings deeply invested in, that I had recruited. And throughout the process, these young men had no advocate, none. I mean, could you imagine if your son was being called into a room where all his hopes and dreams, everything that he's worked for, was on the line, and was told, if you get a lawyer, it's only going to make you look more guilty, so don't do that. Or if your son was called into a room and they said, look, if you just admit guilt, whether you did it or not, just admit guilt, there's a chance you could get off here. Well, that happened to some people that we love dearly, and they got in big trouble, in fact, banned for life. And so we tried to advocate for players when they didn't have an advocate. We thought the university was advocating for him, but really the university was advocating for the university.
Well, and this gets to some of the, especially in collegiate sports, you talked about everybody being a free agent, and certainly once you go pro, it's true, but there is no agency at all for athletes at the collegiate level, right? I mean, they're owned and operated. They're owned and operated by the
university. By the university, and that's something that is kind of camouflaged in our system of higher education. You know, we have a lot of rhetoric in our institutions of higher learning about, you know, how these institutions are there to nurture the human being to be the best that they can be. And a lot of those values get checked at the door of athletic departments. That's a business. And so the people involved in that business are commodities. And that's one of the things I talk to parents of high school athletes about. Your child is a commodity. You need to understand that. You need to understand that they're not doing you a favor.
But the universities will say this. It's not a bad business deal for those students who get scholarships. They're getting something that might be worth $40,000, $50,000 a year for 4 years, getting a degree.
Right. That is an argument that definitely has traction in American culture. However, if you dig a little deeper and you look at the numbers and you look at the revenue that's generated, billions with a B, it's not a very good deal. And so the false argument of should players get paid or not is... It is a false argument because they already are paid. They get scholarships. It's not a fair wage, especially when the product that they're being paid with doesn't really carry with it a useful education. And that happens for a lot of athletes.
John, you got to Purdue and you started talking about, and you and Marcia both were talking about concussions. Tell us about the story there at Purdue.
Well, there are two engineers at Purdue that I think are doing groundbreaking work. Tom Tulavich and Eric Nauman, with regards to subconcussive hits. So much of the work on concussions that's done now is once you have a concussion, what's the protocol to get you back? Well, these men were doing some fantastic work, and they were doing it with the high schools in the local community, and they wanted to do it with the football team at Purdue. Well, son of a gun, I thought this was a win-win. I thought this was the greatest recruiting tool in the world, that I was going to be able to go into, you know, the homes of people and say, we've got this tool that really monitors where your son is in the subconcussive hits. That is, if a concussion is, say, a boiling point of 212, water boils at 212, say that's when you hit your concussion. These guys can tell you if you're getting up around 190, 195, and say, hey, this guy needs to back off a little bit. If you want him to play on Saturday, he can't hit anymore for the next 2 days. I think that's groundbreaking work. I think that's something that every coach would want to know, because once you ring that bell, once you reach that boiling point, you can't unring it, right, unboil it. And I thought it was the greatest gift to our football team. As it turns out, the athletic director and the administration had other ideas.
They didn't want to hear it.
No. They did not.
Because it suggests that a concussion is not a one-time event. It is a cumulative event. And sadly, you see all this this about new technology and helmets and how the helmets can protect the head. The concussion can actually happen from body blows, snapping of the head. Mm-hmm. Right. So you don't have to even have a helmet get hit in the head to begin developing a concussion. So right. If I'm only focused on a helmet, I'm missing the point.
Well, and part of what Eric Nauman and Tom Tulavich are doing at Purdue is looking at helmet technologies. And they've borrowed... from the engineering of the auto industry to look at how helmets could actually start to absorb impact and not just prevent catastrophic fractures of the skull. No one wants to talk to them about that.
Because you've got to measure people on the way up, maybe pull them from the game before they've actually gotten
the concussion. And also you admit liability when you say the equipment we've been using hasn't been doing what we said it does. And they're, the NCAA is washing their hands of it, and really the NFL has tried to as well. So it's political, but I think the tide is turning because more players are starting to advocate for themselves and get knowledge about the impact, literally and figuratively, of playing football over the long haul.
Marcia, you have talked too, and you've both done an episode on the role of evangelical Christians in sport. Tell us about that.
Well, that's been an interesting journey for me as a woman who is an ordained minister in one of the few denominations in our country that ordains women to ministry, and also as somebody with a PhD in religious studies. And we've kind of been on the margins of the religious conversation in big-time sports because of my gender and also because of our quote-unquote brand of Christianity, I guess. But part of what we've noticed, part of what we've encountered is just a real monopoly in both collegiate and professional sports for a particular kind of Christianity that, frankly, I have less problems. I don't resonate with theologically, but my problems are more about power and the way we use our power with people who have less power than we do.
And what was interesting in your podcast is that you interviewed Tom Krattenmaker about this. He's the communications director at Yale Divinity School. His suggestion is this co-branding is not coincidental. Give us a sense of what he was saying, because what he was saying was this is actually part of a plan. This is not an accident.
Exactly. The wisdom and genius of parachurch movements like the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, Athletes in Action, is that they saw a marketing opportunity for Christianity and for their brand of Christianity in the strong relationships that exist in sports between a coach and a player. So the first move they made, the first entree that they made into the world of sports was with coaches, asking if coaches would use their platform, their position in a player's life to talk about their faith. Then they started capitalizing on players, and as players have become more commercialized, you see that usage even more, using your platform as an athlete, as a sports figure, to promote a particular faith
and we see
disposition.
This, and we see that with the sort of the circling up and the prayer. Mm-hmm. Of course, I've always wondered if I see one player from one team do a prayer in the end zone, then the other team, you know, like if God
is... So what's up with that, God?
Well, you know, he could have some money on that game.
That's right. Maybe it's all about the point spread for God and not about the final score.
But it was interesting, the point that he made. I think we have that clip ready, and I think he makes an interesting point. It's worth hearing Tom Krattenmaker.
Christian engagement with sports came back strong around the World War II era. And as we alluded to earlier, evangelism became more and more the emphasis. Not the character that you could develop through playing sports, but the usefulness of sports as a vehicle for conveying the Christian message, especially a theologically conservative Christian message.
Tom Krattenmaker in the podcast Going Deep, Sports in the 21st Century. Podcast premieres next week on Blue Ridge Public Radio. And my guests are the co-creators John Shoup and Marcia Mount Shoup. And John, another episode deals with the use of cannabis in sport.
Yeah, we talked to Jake Plummer, a former all-pro quarterback and an all-American quarterback, who's an amazing guy, and Heather Jackson, who's a mother. And the show is about the unlikely alliance of an all-American football player and a mother of a child that has needs, specifically has seizures, and that they're forming this alliance to lead the legalization of medical cannabis in our country. And I think it's a powerful, powerful story.
Tell me about the impact of your podcast. You had a season last year. The next season premieres, is it next week, right?
Yes.
Here at Blue Ridge Public Radio. Tell us about the impact that you've had so far and the kind of feedback you're getting on this podcast.
Well, there is a growing community that I call the sports reform community of people talking about these issues. That community has really found our podcast to be a great resource. Our previous iteration of this show was able to go really in depth. We have 4 hours of shows on things like concussions and also the economics of sports. So we're able to take people past the sound bites into the really what's going on here, like about scholarships, like about concussions, like about players' rights. And people have talked to us a lot, players, reformers, ethicists, social workers, professors, athletic administrators, about how they just have never had the opportunity to really dig deeper into these topics.
And lest anybody think it is only sports, we've already proven how integrated it is with economics, business, religion, right, in America, and not to mention academics and healthcare. John, brief preview. So what give us some of the other topics coming up this season?
Well, I think that there's a bunch of neat ones. One I especially enjoy is on rugby, and we kind of compare rugby to American football. Our son is an avid rugby player. The medical cannabis, I think, is a wonderful episode that we talked about, and forced faith and muscular Christianity are two episodes, but also one about what we called the arms race, and that is why so much money is being spent on college athletics facilities, and why people like Clemson have a barbershop, a giant slide, paintball and putt-putt golf courses within their football facility, and who really wants it and doesn't.
Great stuff. John Shoup and Marsha Mount Shoup, their podcast Going Deep, Sports in the 21st Century, premieres on Blue Ridge Public Radio next Saturday. You can get the details at our website, stateofthings.org. Thank you both for being on the program.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And thank you for listening to The State of Things, enjoying our stay here in Asheville. It's a program produced by Anita Rao, Charlie Sheldon Ormond, Laura Pelliser, and Jennifer Brooklyn. Robin Copley is our technical director with Lee Wilcher, and Barbara Sayer is the program director here. Matt Bush helped us out today, the news director as well. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.